new faulty equation, like 9-1-1 equals U.S. invasion. We are not nation builders, we now know for certain. We're building the sovereign state of Halliburton, ignoring the guy there behind the big curtain. Driving around feeling groovy, the star-spangled banner on every SUV. The Butcher of Baghdad was your nom de guerre, a nickname you'll have to be willing to share. Now that we've opened up our own butcher shop there, in fact, we'll have to rename you and clean our mess up in Mesopotamia. Saddam shame, Saddam shame, we all had to learn your damn name. Only three questions remain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Yes, only three questions remain.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud. I come in from the wilderness, a preacher void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. If I pass...
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing, in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protests. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at AMIBA.net.
If you're an aspiring performer who wants to be on the screen, Chicago might be your kind of town. In fact, virtually everyone in the Windy City will soon be seen by various police authorities. In a leap into the abyss of the surveillance society, Chicago authorities are installing a web of spy cameras linked to a sophisticated new computer program that not only will view everyone who appears on various streets, but also will alert police agents when anyone is acting suspicious. What is suspicious? Wandering around aimlessly, lingering outside a building, pulling your car over to the shoulder of a highway, leaving a package in a doorway, and other common acts you and I have done 1,000 times. What we're doing is a totally new concept, says the director of this intrusive technology. It's going to take us to a whole new level. I'll say, the Snooper Vision cameras can zoom in on you and follow you from camera to camera, recording your every move, whether or not you're doing anything wrong. Faceless bureaucrats will sit in an undisclosed fortified building, monitoring the screens and dispatching armed police to accost loiterers, aimless wanderers, and other suspicious characters. Not only will the police place these so-called smart cameras around town, but so will housing, transportation, and other city agencies, even street sweepers, making Chicagoans the most watched people in America. Orwell would be so proud. Of course, the authorities insist that this is for our own good, claiming we'll all be safer. Chicago's new surveillance director says the value we'll gain in public safety far outweighs any perception by the community that this is Big Brother who's watching. But wait a minute, it is Big Brother watching. Yet Chicago's mayor dismisses all of us pesky civil libertarians, saying that, after all, we're not inside your home or your business. This is Jim Hightower saying, not yet they're not.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Monday. Greetings, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, on radio stations from coast to coast, and beaming around the planet on the radiopower.org, one of the finest web-based radio stations there is, as well as into cable systems in 29 states, some 27 million homes on cable radio network. Welcome to our program. Interesting things here for the day. It's going to be a long day. By the way, just as an FYI, I'll also, this program, of course, is live from noon to 3 Eastern time. And then from 3 till 7, I'll be filling in for Randy Rhodes on her program on Air America Radio. So it's going to be an interesting 7 hours today. Let's start out with a little bit of strange news. A greater risk than Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction. Odds are 1 in 60 that an asteroid is going to hit the Earth in 2029. Friday, December 24th, last Friday, day before Christmas, they upgraded the chance to an unprecedented level of risk. Level 4 rating, never been done before. Level 4 rating, never been issued, reserved for events meriting concern. Now here's the kicker. Rama Schneider pointed this out to me when he came in this morning. Rama is here in the studio. If you call 1-866-889-8894, you get to say hi to him. He's engineering our program here today. And by the way, if you want to drop into our chat room, go to tomhartmann.com. And we have a new chat room starting today, separate from the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. We've moved into a new one over directly on our web server, on our web space. It has a few extra features, the ability to hot link and things like that, and change color and fonts and whatnot. Anyhow, Rama came in this morning, and about an hour ago, and he said, you know, that asteroid is supposed to hit the Earth on April 13th, 2029, 1 in 60 chance. I said, yeah. And he said, well, I looked on a calendar, and on 2029, April 13th is a Friday. Yes, Friday the 13th, April 13th, 2029, the asteroid is on its way. So we still have a ways to worry about it. But here's the thing. Isn't the potential of an asteroid that could produce a 1,000-megaton explosion? Keep in mind the Hiroshima bomb was either a tenth or a quarter of a megaton. A 1,000-megaton explosion, it hits in the ocean, it'll just swamp land in all directions. Hits on any landmass, it's just going to take out huge chunks of humanity. Isn't this worthy of perhaps more effort than Saddam Hussein? I mean, here's the guy, he had no weapons of mass destruction. The worst thing that they could find to pin on him, other than that he was, you know, being a nasty guy to some of his own people, which you can pin on probably 80 or 90 of the world's worst dictators, and certainly Saddam was not the worst among them. I mean, he went the worst. Look at Robert Mugabe. Look at what's going on in Burma. But in any case, here's this guy. He didn't even have weapons of mass destruction, and the UN was in the process of figuring it out. So George Bush had to do a preemptive invasion so he could get his election year war in quickly before the UN pointed out that it wasn't the case. But here we are spending $200 billion a year to take out, to secure the oil fields in Iraq. And we have an asteroid heading toward Earth. Maybe this will be the thing. You know, in those movies, it's always it's the foreign invaders. It's the asteroids. They cause everybody to pull together and unite the planet. Yeah, it's a possibility. With regard to Iraq, by the way, our quote for the day, the right of voting for representatives is the primary right by which all other rights are protected. To take away this right is to reduce a man to slavery. Thomas Paine. And in the second hour of the program, we're going to be talking with Cliff Arnebeck, the attorney in Ohio who has filed a lawsuit against George Bush, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, et al., for election theft. Cliff Arnebeck's novel theory is that in the Ukraine, the exit polls showed that Yushchenko won and the bad guy lost. And in the United States, the exit polls show that Kerry won and Bush lost, and they were only a point off, as I recall. I mean, actually, nobody knows for sure. We just have the early results. And, in fact, John Conyers is begging the networks and the polling company to tell us. I suspect that the information will be forthcoming after the inauguration, if at all. But it appears that there was really only about 1 point difference between our exit polls and the Ukraine's. They got a new election. All we got was George Bush. And so, anyhow, Cliff is going to talk about that. He's of the opinion, and this is a serious guy, a serious attorney who, he's not a flake. He's a solid guy. And he's of the opinion that John Kerry actually won the election. That millions of votes nationwide were illegally diverted to George W. Bush as a result of election fraud. We'll see. We'll talk to him about an hour from now. In the New York Times today, this article by Stephen Weissman, U.S. has suggesting guaranteeing roles for Iraq Sunnis. See, here's the problem that we have in Iraq. If we have a what you might call true democracy, as it were, relatively pure democracy, if we simply say, okay, we're going to have an election and majority wins, And whoever's in the majority, they take it. Then you're going to have the Shiites, who are closely aligned with Iran, which is Shia, also Shiites. You're going to have the Shiites running the country. Now, the Sunnis are not at all happy about this. Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. The Sunnis are only about 20% of the country. And they had, you know, pretty effective control of Iraq for, well, basically ever since we helped install Saddam Hussein. And so the Sunnis are saying, well, you know, we know we're going to get locked out and we're not going to play. Therefore, if they don't play, if we can't figure out a way to get them in, then the elections won't be legitimate. So here's this two-step. And then after I share this with you, I'll share with you what I think is really the solution, what we should be doing, but we're not. In any case, here from today's New York Times, Stephen Weissman writes, the Bush administration is talking to Iraqi leaders about guaranteeing Sunni Arabs a certain number of ministries or high-level jobs in the future Iraqi government if, as is widely predicted, Sunni candidates fail to do well in Iraq's elections. An even more radical step, Weissman notes in the today's Times, one that a Western diplomat said was already raised with an aide to Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, Iraq's most revered Shiite cleric and recent immigrant from Iran, by the way, is the possibility of adding some of the top vote-getters among the Sunni candidates to this 275-member legislature, even if they lose to non-Sunni candidates. Well, Sistani's not so happy about that. The diplomat said even some Shiite politicians who were followers of Ayatollah Sistani were concerned that a Pyrrhic victory by Shiite, one of those words that you read and you never... Anyhow, effectively shutting Sunni Arabs out of power could alienate Sunnis and lead to more internal strife. Shiites make up 60% of Iraqis and were generally denied power under Saddam Hussein. And they note that there are other countries that have this kind of a situation. Lebanon, for example, has a power-sharing arrangement among its main sectarian groups. And in Iran, there are certain parliamentary seats set aside for the religious minorities. Now, at the same time, somehow my stories got reorganized here. It's gone. I don't know what happened to it. Anyhow, at the same time, here's my suggestion. My suggestion on this thing, very straightforward, is that what we do is in Iraq is we suggest a bicameral legislature. We faced this same problem or a very similar problem here in the United States in 1787. We had two basic problems. One was that the South was slaveholding and was thinly populated by whites and more heavily populated by blacks who were not allowed to vote in the South. And in the North, you had very few blacks and mostly whites, and there was no slavery. And the Southern states were saying, we're not going to join the Union if, you know, we don't have some power, if we don't have some kind of representation. Otherwise, we'll just always get outvoted. And the Northern states were saying, well, we don't want to have the South impose its will on us and force the North to become slave states or something. I mean, so there was this battle going on in 1787. And the way they solved it was with two steps. The first was they created a second house of representation. There was the House of Representatives, and they created a second one that they called the Senate. And they said every state, now there's some of the small states like Delaware were also concerned about this. There were small states, big states. And so they said every state, regardless of its size, regardless of its population, will have two senators, period. Great big state, little tiny state, state with a lot of white people in it, state with very few white people in it, two senators. That was one. And the other was the three-fifths problem, whatever, and that was that it was written into the Constitution that the slave trade would end in 1808. And the founders, by and large, figured that by 1810, 1815, they would have ended slavery. Jefferson certainly believed this, that by writing this into the Constitution, they were going to end slavery within his lifetime. They did not succeed, by the way, as we know from the Civil War. But nonetheless, they saw this coming. And so what they said to the folks in the South, to the white folks in the South who were voting, was until the slaves are freed and they can vote, because the number of members of the House of Representatives is a function of how many people live in your state. Right? Every 10 years, there's a census, and you figure out how many representatives you're going to have. We will allow you to count 3/5 of the slaves in the South toward your census for representation. And then, of course, once they can vote, all of them can get counted. And it didn't mean that an African American was counted as 3/5 of a human. It was the 3/5 of the slaves were counted for the purposes of representation, of determining how many congressmen or members of Congress a southern slave state would have. Well, that same sort of compromise or variation on it, I think, would be a really important thing here. If Iraq, instead of having a single legislature, which essentially creates a winner-take-all situation where the Shiites, 60% of the population, end up controlling the whole thing, instead if they created a second house, a Senate, very similar to the United States Senate, and said, you know, say, you know, the Shiites get 2 senators, the Kurds get 2 senators, the Sunnis get 2 senators, break the country up into regions, into states. Originally, it was three states in the Ottoman Empire. Give each of them a couple of senators and figure out a way to apportion votes that kind of solves this problem. I haven't completely figured this out, but this is the direction I think we should be moving. We could prevent a civil war, but I don't hear the Bush administration talking about this. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, TomHartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV TV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my Direct TV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, the truth. Welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. The truth is that in the United States, people of color and people of lower income, which is not always the same. There are more poor white people in the United States than poor African Americans or poor Latinos, but nonetheless, tend to have shorter lifespans. And I got to tell you, according to the conservatives, if you're African American in the United States, you're lucky because your Social Security benefits are a little better because you have a shortened lifespan. You don't believe me? No, I'm serious. This is David Dreyer, the only non-openly gay member of Congress. He's recently been outed, but he's still... he was outed, actually, by Larry Flynt specifically because he has worked so hard and voted so aggressively against gay issues. And now it turns out he's been secretly living a double life and is continuing to. Nonetheless, David Dreyer on Late Edition, and this is the TV program Late Edition, promoting Social Security reform, had the following dialogue, the following discussion with Congressman Charlie Rangel. Get this.
There would be four options. There would be four options that that workers
would
have.
How do you
know
this?
Well, I'm just talking about the proposals. There would be options for investment. Right. If you look at the plans that have succeeded in Chile and other parts of the world, there would be options that would not allow people to invest in penny stocks that potentially could see their investment go right down the drain. There would be options that would give a higher rate of return than today is received on Social Security. And, Charlie, I will tell you, African Americans would be the greatest beneficiaries of this, as they would be able, with a shortened lifespan, they would...
What? I've got to hear this again.
I will tell you, African Americans would be the greatest beneficiaries of this, as they would be able, with a shortened lifespan, they would be able to pass this on to future generations. So I think that this whole notion of private...
Because we die earlier, we should invest then. The truth is...
It's something that can be passed on to future generations, Charlie.
Give me a break. The truth of the matter is that we do get more money from the survivors since the women live long. And so basing this on how fast you intend to die, another thing, I promised the president that I will wait until he comes forth with a plan.
Thank you for that.
And unlike you, I'm not going to review the children.
Yeah, another... Charlie Rangel isn't going to fight, isn't going to discuss the details until... It's assumed now, April, when George Bush rolls this thing out. In all probability, he's going to do it the way he does other things in the past. He waits until the last minute, rolls the thing out, says, okay, you got 24 hours to vote on it. After having done a huge buildup to it to make everybody, to cause the American public to think, oh, we've got to have this. This thing is the cat's pajamas, you know, whether it was Homeland Security or the war in Iraq or whatever, and or this recent intelligence consolidation. And just roll all this stuff out at the last minute. Take it or leave it. Come on, let's go. Move it ahead. But I agree with Charlie Rangel. Give me a break. African Americans should be in favor of Social Security privatization because they don't live as long. Why not reduce poverty? Why not improve our health care system? Looney Tunes is not quite close enough to describe this. By the way, I got an email from Ernest Partridge. He says it was Phil Graham, ex-Republican of Texas, who says, I was never hired by a poor man. He says, I heard him say it with my own ears. I've also heard that on numerous right-wing talk shows. Anyhow, he says, for that matter, though,
Most of his working life, Graham was never hired by a rich man. He began his career as a professor of economics at Texas A&M, paid by the taxpayers of Texas, went on to the House of Representatives and then to the Senate, paid by U.S. taxpayers. So most of his life, he was drawing, shall we say, public salary, typical GOP hypocrisy. Now, out of the Senate, he's being lavishly rewarded by rich folks for his service to them while in the Senate. Incidentally, Mrs. Graham, Wendy, was appointed by Poppy Bush to FERC, F-E-R-C, where she gave get-out-of-jail-free cards to Enron and then to the board of Enron, or was it vice versa, don't recall. Anyhow, Bernie Partridge has got to stop now. This is making me sick. Phil Graham, yeah, never hired by a poor man. This is in response to our point earlier that it's middle-class entrepreneurs who create the majority of jobs in America. 29 minutes past the hour.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friend. I want to make that point one more time, just in the hopes that somebody from the Bush administration is listening, or somebody who can, some member of Congress, somebody who knows a member of Congress, somebody who can pass the idea along. The proposal for Iraq is for a unicameral legislature, for a single body, a parliament. As most legislature, most governments have been since basically the 1870s or so, ever since John Stuart Mill in 1861 came up with the idea of proportional representation. You basically have one House of Parliament. Now, the UK has a House of Lords and a House of Commons, a remnant from the days, well, House of Lords still are in some regards hereditary, but you know, a remnant from the days of feudalism, when the feudal lords really ran things. And we sort of imitated that in the Senate, but it was also a way of dealing with the fact that we had very disparate, as in very differing, populations in different parts of the country. And that combined with a federal system with strong states, a weak central government and strong states, is a way, I believe, to deal with this problem that we have in Iraq, of trying to put together a government there. And that would be to create a system where the individual states, and there's three obvious states that you could create, but you could probably even make subdivisions smaller than that and come up with 6 or 8 or 10 states. Obviously, the South with the Shia used to be one state under the Ottoman Empire. These were all combined after 1918 when the Ottoman Empire collapsed. Southern state was Shia, the Centrals were the Sunnis, the North were the Kurds. And the Kurds, of course, were part of something that at one time was larger Kurdistan, which encompassed part of Turkey, too. But you start talking about that, the Turks get really weird. And, see, this is the real danger. If this doesn't work, you're going to end up with a civil war, and these three nations are going to emerge. And the Kurds in the North will probably provoke a war with Turkey, and then, you know, the whole Middle East could go down in flames. So, and for that matter, the Sunnis against Iran, because they share a bunch of that border. So the solution, or a solution, is to have a bicameral legislature, essentially a House and a Senate, and where representation between the Shia, the Sunni, and the Kurds is more disproportionately equal, is relatively equal in the Senate, for example, than in the House. The House would be more reflecting the actual populations. And the result of this, the upshot of this, would be that the Sunnis wouldn't feel disenfranchised, nor would the Kurds. They would feel like, you know, they had a say in the government. And then you also give an awful lot of powers to the states rather than holding all power at the federal level. And that, I think, would be a prescription for holding this thing together. You know, that's logical, and therefore it probably won't happen with the Bush administration. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to phone in. Rick in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom, provoking show as always.
Thank you. I think.
Yes. You mentioned that term Pyrrhic victory there a while back.
Yeah, is that how you say it, Pyrrhic?
Yeah, it's a victory that might go up in flames, and I guess it comes from the same etymology as like a funeral pyre where they burn the...
Right, and that's why I've read it many times over the years. I've never heard anybody actually say it out loud, and I didn't know if it was Pyrrhic or Pyrrhic or...
Well, I'm not sure the pronunciation, but... Yeah. And also, I, like you, I don't know if you saw it live, I watched Late Edition, you know, and I thought, well, it's a day after Christmas. I'm not going to watch all this political nonsense, but... I couldn't tear myself away, and I missed the Falwell-Jackson confrontation, but I saw Brzezinski and Kissinger, and then, of course, our friends David Dreyer and Charlie Rangel, and, of course, not one mention was made of Mr. Dreyer's newly outed orientation. But
Nor will it be. It's a story that the mainstream press has yet to touch.
Yeah, and, of course, you could say, well, everybody knows Barney Frank is, but, of course, Barney Frank is unabashedly open about it.
Yeah.
At any rate... I heard that. And,
you know, I have to say, by the way, I think it's very strange that the cons are so enthusiastic about talking about the private details of Bill Clinton's sex life, and yet they don't, and yet the media is going along with them in not discussing the details of David Dreyer's sex life.
Well, you know, I think a lot of these Republican people that were after Clinton, some of them were gay, and I'm thinking of Matt Drudge. Now, believe it or not, last night I was reduced to listening to Matt Drudge with Ann Coulter as his guest. So, you know, I talk about going through purgatory.
Yeah, but Drudge, like Dyer, has also been outed and is also another one of these guys who gives great, who plays homage to the gay baiting that's done, gay bashing that's done by the Republicans. And,
well, you know, we have self-hating gays.
But I'd say the greater proportion of hypocrites weren't the gays who were, you know, the closeted gays who were going after Clinton. It was guys like Newt Gingrich and I believe it was Livingston, and there were several others who Bob Barr,
Henry Hyde, Dan Burton.
There you go. Who were all getting it on with their secretaries or their interns at the same time that they were getting up on the House floor of the House of Representatives, going, "This is an abomination. We are setting a terrible moral example for America. We have to impeach this man." And then and it was Larry Flint who actually outed several of them too.
Well. But the thing about Dreyer, you know, with this business, and of course, I don't know about you, but I'm past being shocked by GOP outrages. And when they actually tried to say, when Dreyer did, you know, Dreyer always came off to me as relatively a reasonable man. But when he said that, you know, well, the blacks ought to buy into this, Charlie, you know, because after all, they die earlier. But anyway, the real reason I called today was I heard you mention that asteroid.
Yeah.
Now, I have a friend who's very conservative. But he and I share some of the same outlooks in the sense that we think the establishment, which is, of course, liberal and, you know, conservative, Democrat, Republican, there's no labels on the people that actually run our lives. And he says, he brought up an interesting point, you know, for decades we were afraid of the communists. There was the communist scare. They're under every bed. They're in the closet. They're, you know, they're everywhere. Now, of course, it's terrorists. And, you know, they got to watch out for terrorists. And I'm not saying these aren't real dangers. I'm just talking about how the power elite manipulates us.
Sure.
Now everything is terrorism. It's the basis. You know, even people like Bill Maher, who are very liberal, say, well, everything changed on 9/11. Well, no, it didn't. And here's two future things to look out for. And you might say, well, how could this be? But it's not so much that these dangers aren't all real dangers, except for the last one I'm about to bring up, but it's the fact of how we're manipulated. The next danger will be things like asteroids and comets that may hit our Earth. And then as a last straw, they're probably going to bring up an extraterrestrial threat. And what this all does is, number one, it scares all of us half to death. And it says, well, the government has to take more and more power, and you're going to have to cede some of your rights. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but I think people on the left and the right both have a concern about world government. And the very last threat they could use would be extraterrestrials. Remember when Gorbachev met Reagan during one of the summits, how it was brought up, you know, if there were a threat from outer space.
Yeah, Reagan actually said that. And this is you raise a good point, Rick, and thanks for the call. I appreciate you raising that. As I mentioned, you know, in the movie, the external threat always pulls us together. Wouldn't it be nice if we were all pulling together behind the "let's stop the asteroid," although they would probably use that to develop some new Star Wars technology that they could use to zap the Earth from outer space. But the other real danger that you didn't mention, Rick, is the danger of disease. We are creating some superbugs by virtue of our factory farm techniques, particularly in Asia. And the bird flus and SARS, and they represent a real threat to the human race. And we are spending on them two days' worth of Iraq every year. I mean, it's just nothing. But anyway. Rama tells me, the phrase alludes to the king Pyrrhus of Epirus, who defeated the Romans at Heracleia and Asculum in 279 B.C., but with severe casualties of his own. Pyrrhus's famous statement, "One more such victory and I am lost," led to the term Pyrrhic victory, for any victory so costly as to be ruinous. Thank you, Rama. Very, very well done. Mark in Woodlawn. What state, Woodlawn?
Tennessee.
Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Yeah, thank you, Tom. I wish I was better at remembering names, but I was listening to a leftist talk show, and they had a general from Iraq who was setting up the elections. And they posed a question to him about whether they'd end up with a religious-type government. And he said, oh, that's not going to happen because we're setting up Electoral College. And that's how they're planning on getting their man in.
for the
in Iraq.
For the equivalent of president. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's the case. I believe that, first of all, the Electoral College would not be for all the representatives of the parliament. And I believe that they're going to do a parliamentary democracy where you vote for your member of parliament or you vote for the party for your and then the party sends in that the particular person that's their candidate. And then parliament gets all together and they elect the prime minister. So, as to the best of my knowledge, maybe somebody will call and correct me, but I don't think that they're.
I thought they were going to get each one of the provinces and population and do a little finagling and end up with so many electoral votes for each one of them so that no one of them had a majority.
Yeah, well, see, to do that, they'd have to do some serious gerrymandering. That's why I think that
capable of it.
Well, yeah, all they got to do is ask Tom DeLay to go over and help them out. I think though that a bicameral legislature is and a weak federal system is the solution. However, that would make the country less easily manipulated by us, and it's pretty clear that the agenda of this administration is to build 17 military bases over there, use Iraq as our base of operation, and take the oil.
Their main point is to get their man in and sign the contracts for the oil.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, period. Well said. Mark, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Have a great day and a happy new year coming up. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Francis in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Francis.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I heard you mention Pyrrhic victory. It's actually a Pyrrhic victory after that fellow Cyrus that Rama researched. And
how do you pronounce it?
Cyrrhic.
Cyrrhic.
I'm not sounding right because I can't pronounce those words right, but it's pronounced the same way as physician, P-H as in physician.
Oh, so it would be like Pyrrhic victory, almost like
yes.
An F.
Yeah, and basically, figure can't win for losing.
Right, right, yeah.
They lost so much, yeah.
Yeah, a Pyrrhic victory is one where after you're all done, you won and you wish you'd never started.
Yes.
Yeah, because you've lost more than you won. Yeah, right, but, yeah, okay, good.
I keep hearing that analogy because I have used that term so much in my adult life, and it ran into very few other adults who remember it from their childhood.
Yeah, I can, I've known it since I was a kid. I mean, I have read it, but I've never heard another person say it out loud, and I had to today, and now I've had two people set me straight.
Yeah, I have that with a lot of words, but since I got that from a teacher, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Francis. I appreciate the call and the correction. Pyrrhic. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Very well done. Moving along, I have to say, some folks, this is an email that I got from Tom in Santa Fe. And last week, I was quoting from Milton Mayer, a book he wrote called They Thought They Were Free. An American reporter who of Jewish ancestry who had gone over to Germany immediately after the war and spent several years there interviewing both German Christians and German Jews, the few that were left, asking them, what happened? How did you let this happen? And so many of them, it was really quite a remarkable piece. And if you go to TomHartmann.com and click on the Articles on Democracy link, it's the top story on that page, something about fear all wrapped up for Christmas or whatever, and an extensive quote from Milton Mayer's book. And Tom points out, the author you quoted, he says, I believe it was Mayer, stated that not only was the evolution of Nazi Germany slow and imperceptible to most Germans, but that even those who saw the change could not bring themselves to believe what was really happening. We know, he said, that the vast majority of Republican voters do not wish to destroy what our founders created. I agree. Yet if the Republican neocon group is truly out to create a corporatocracy, and I would say not only are they out to create it, it's already here, it would seem that the entire, some of them must be intentionally out to destroy the American experiment, writes Tom. It would seem the entire Republican Party and most of the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C., corporate CEOs, and many corporate employees must be in on the plot. This seems so evil and fantastic like Mayer, incredulity undermines reason. He says, how do we reconcile the gut-level contradiction that the leaders we see on TV and in person every day are not what they seem? Have they deceived themselves? Are they truly that cynical? How can they walk the halls of Congress, spout patriotic rhetoric, yet participate in the dismantling of the democracy? What the heck are they thinking? Well, here's the answer, Tom. This is a debate that has been going on in the United States since its founding. Alexander Hamilton and John Adams did not believe in democracy. They worked very hard to make sure that the Senate was not directly elected by the people, and it wasn't until the second decade of the 20th century, we finally got to elect our senators. Before that, the states appointed them. And they had the Electoral College, and all of this was to insulate the government from the people because several of the founders really and truly did not believe in democracy. And that is at the core of the worldview, the belief system of many of today's modern conservatives. They really believe in a system of government that is historically known as feudal aristocracy. It's not called that anymore. It's now called neoliberalism by most of the world. But that's what it is. It's rule, and they believe in this because they believe that this is the best way to have a stable government, where you have a powerful ruling elite that has this sense of noblesse oblige, the obligation of nobility, to care for all the rest of us in whatever way they do, and to enrich themselves, because it's hard work being in charge and being rich, see. And that's it. It's aristocracy. But I think that they're well-intentioned. Wrong, but well-intentioned.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. WIN reporter Vinnie Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Caballero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community is going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinnie Lombardo.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Why does the sun go on shining?
Well, it has to do with nuclear fusion.
Why does the sea rush to shore?
That has to do with gravity. We don't want to get into this, but it's not Science Day. Four and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Oregon. Hey, Mike, you listening on KBBR in Coos Bay there?
Well, no, actually, I'm catching it from radio power on the stream.
Oh, how cool. Welcome to the program.
I'm really delighted to have discovered you.
Yeah. What's up, Mike?
Always learning things. Hey, listen, I just, you know, I had this thought that, and I'm kind of curious about your reaction or the idea that the reason we're not getting the news we need is because we don't want the news we need, and that actually we're suffering from a kind of a national denial. It's a malaise. And
I don't believe it for a second, Mike. Don't believe it for a second. No, I am convinced that we're not getting the news we need. Because it's not in the financial interest of a small number of very large corporations that control most, particularly television network news, to deliver it to us. You know, it's don't rock the boat.
Right.
It's the don't rock the boat syndrome. And investigative journalism that was aggressively being done 10, 20, 30 years ago. You know, Nixon complained about the press, but he never tried to constrain the press. He didn't play games. He didn't allow, you know, certain reporters to ask him questions and others not to. You know, he complained about it, but he went along. He understood the value of it. It's a whole different bunch in there in the White House on the one hand. And on the other hand, you've got the press. Now, increasingly, there are reporters. People say, you know, where are all the investigative reporters? Well, in order to be an investigative reporter these days, other than folks like Bob Fitrakis, who work for the Columbus Free Press, you know, brilliant guy, one of the best out there, but it's a small publication. He's not making much. Most of the investigative reporters are working for huge multinational corporations. They're drawing six-figure salaries, healthy six-figure salaries, and they do not want to risk losing their jobs. And therefore, they are not going to investigate the real rot in our society. Mike, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, but that's my diagnosis. Lynn in Eureka, California. Hey, Lynn, you listening on KTRC?
Yeah, no.
Or KGOE, rather.
KGOE, yeah.
Right. By the way, just after the first of the year, KGOE is adding the third hour of our program to the show.
I know that, and I'm looking forward to it.
Great.
I've been kind of hounding them to do that.
Lynn, we got about 20 seconds. What's up?
Okay, well, listen, I disagreed with your ending comment at the last segment.
I don't
believe that the Republicans have intentions of looking out for us, and I don't believe they're well-intentioned.
You think that they're just plain old evil?
Close to it. I think they have, I don't know whether evil, but... close to it. I don't know how to word it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll bring it up in the next hour. We'll see where we go with that. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. I just subscribe to the theory that everybody has to wake up in the morning and look themselves in the mirror, and they have some rationalization. But I'm sure that there are some who are not. Who are not good folks. But anyhow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing, in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protests. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
In the cacophony of Christmas commercialism, it can be difficult even to recall that it's about Jesus. But this is hardly the only time that Jesus gets lost. Take politics. In the recent presidential run, much was made by George W. and his handlers of his supposedly superior moral values based on his commitment to Jesus. But before we let Bush steal away with the robe of Jesus and don it as a Republican garment, let's reflect a moment on the moral teachings of this man from Nazareth. Like George, I grew up in a Methodist church in Texas. Unlike George, I didn't find any burning anti-liberal theology there. My little church might have considered itself conservative, but only in terms of its commitment to the deeply egalitarian, truly progressive values we found in the biblical teachings of Jesus. I recall many a sermon that began with Jesus' words in Matthew 19:24, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." I recall that the greatest sin of all, the root of all evil, Jesus said, is the love of money. I recall the passionate retelling of how Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, threw them out for charging interest rates far less than usurious bankers now charge us on our Visas and MasterCards, by the way. I recall also that Jesus fed all the masses that day on the hillside at the Sea of Galilee, not turning anyone away who lacked a platinum card to buy fishes and loaves. And I recall that Jesus flatly said, "You cannot serve both God and mammon." In the Good Book, Jesus talks more about economic justice than nearly any other subject, and the apostles made clear that the most important ethical religious test of Judeo-Christian faith is in how we treat the least wealthy, least important among us. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's call on Bush, and the Democrats too, to live up to these moral values before they claim that Jesus is on their side.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And at TomHartman.com's topic-by-topic archives. You can also drop into our chat room, already pretty full, well-populated, one of the finest conversations in all of cyberspace. You'll find there every day here, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
at TomHartmann.com. Just click live chat. In the Ukraine, the results are in. Opposition leader Viktor Yushchenko declared victory today in Ukraine's fiercely contested presidential election, writes Oskar Vasovich in the Associated Press. He says, "We have been independent for 14 years, but we were not free." Here's a quote from his opponent's spokesman, Gennady Gortz. He says, "These polls," he's talking about the exit polls, "don't work. We will win by between 3 and 5%. Remember, if Americans believed exit polls and not the actual count, John Kerry would be president." Now, that gives you a little pause for thought, doesn't it? Because there are some Americans who do believe the exit polls, and Cliff Arnebeck is one of them. Cliff, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you.
I'm pleased to have you here. Cliff is co-chairman of the Alliance for Democracy, chairman of the Legal Affairs Committee of Common Cause Ohio. He's been litigating against the Ohio Chamber of Commerce for its illegal use of corporate money to influence Ohio Supreme Court elections for the past 4 years, and most recently filed an election challenge, a legal challenge, a lawsuit, against George W. Bush on behalf of voters in the state of Ohio who believe the exit polls showing John Kerry as the winner of Ohio were correct. How do you account for this, Cliff?
How do we account for the exit polls being saying that he won?
Yeah, well, for the discrepancy between the exit polls that say that Kerry won. Well, first of all, by what percentage do the exit polls in Ohio say that Kerry won over Bush?
I believe it's about the same percentage that the voting result says that Bush won over Kerry. This was not a close election, according to the exit polls, but rather a definitive win for John Kerry, and the timing of this Ukrainian thing is certainly
ironic,
or makes the point that I'm getting feedback, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it sounds just fine and clean on this end, Cliff. So.
All right.
You can just push through.
Anyway, the situation in Ohio is very much like the Ukraine, and in fact, the same experts who are evaluating the problem in Ohio are saying that there is evidence that the votes were moved from Kerry to Bush nationally as well in order to create the impression that Bush won the popular vote nationally.
No, in other words, you're finding evidence or the implication of evidence that this election was stolen not just in Ohio but in other states as well. I know we had on the show a few days ago an attorney who's in New Mexico, and they're finding truly startling things there, which seem to indicate that the election was, I would say, you know, just based on what I've read, that is solid, that the election was stolen in New Mexico. You're suggesting this has happened nationally, or do you think it happened just in, say, 10 or 15 critical states?
Well, the indication we have is that they may have moved votes in states even where Kerry was winning, so he was going to get the electoral votes, but there would have been votes moved in those states in order to create a better margin for Bush.
This because of the whole issue right after Bush was appointed by the Supreme Court, that he was not perceived by more than half of Americans as being the legitimate president because Al Gore had gotten 500,000 more votes.
Yeah, they wanted to have the appearance of a decisive win to avoid recounts and to avoid controversy of the kind that occurred after the 2000 election.
Yeah. We're talking with Cliff Arnebeck. He's an attorney with the Alliance for Democracy. Cliff, before we go any further, is there a website that you recommend where people can get more information on what you're up to there in Ohio?
Sure. I'll mention a couple of websites. The Alliance for Democracy website is maintained by folks who are not full-time or not professional webmasters, but it has the basic information. It's called thealliancefordemocracy.org. Also, freepress.org is maintained by one of the attorneys on our litigation team, and there's a great deal of information there in terms of expert testimony and things of that sort.
Is that the Free Press where Bob Fitrakis is reporting all the time?
Yeah, it's Bob Fetrakis.
Fetrakis, thank you very much. Yeah. Okay, and the basis of your lawsuit. What is this suit alleging specifically, and what evidence do you have that you think, when presented to a jury or a judge, might cause them to do something? And what's that something that you want done?
I'm sorry, Tom, I was interrupted. The theory of the lawsuit?
Yeah, actually it was kind of three questions. One is, what is the basis of the lawsuit, and who specifically are you suing? And number two, well, we can boil it into two. And number two, what sort of relief are you seeking? What sort of outcome do you want from the lawsuit? What sort of evidence do you have that you think might bring that about?
Okay. The basis for the suit is that the outcome of the election in Ohio is at issue. And to dramatize that point, if someone simply had evidence that 100 votes were improperly cast, and they could prove that in absolute terms, that would not be sufficient to justify an election contest unless the margin in that race was 100 votes. So in order to have a valid or properly pled election contest, you need to say that the votes that are the result of irregularity or fraud amount to at least the difference between the losing and winning candidate in that election. And that's what we're alleging. So we're alleging that if properly counted and corrected, John Kerry would have gotten more votes in Ohio than George Bush.
And what's the evidence that you have of that?
Well, the evidence we have of that is statistical. And one form of statistical evidence is the exit polling, which obviously has proven to be correct in the Ukrainian context.
But haven't
the
science? Pardon my interrupting you, but aren't the American exit polls right now being held in secret? I mean, isn't the company that did these things refusing to release all the details of them?
Yeah, I think they're under a great deal of pressure because, in effect, what people are saying who don't want them to be fully disclosed is that you're putting the legitimacy of the presidency at issue.
Right, but given that they're not fully disclosed, how can you point to them as evidence?
Well, they were disclosed on election night. They were being published as the election proceeded, and so we don't have the actual polls themselves in raw form, which is what we want, and we will be able to get in the course of this litigation. But we do have the report from reliable sources in terms of what the poll showed,
mm-hmm.
And indeed, CNN and I believe one other news organization had called Ohio and called the election for Kerry based upon the exit poll data. The second kind of statistical evidence we have is from experts who look at the election results and have found a number of anomalies which clearly suggest that votes were moved from one candidate to the other. And we can point to specific counties, specific precincts where this movement of votes occurred. And, of course, that's something that we'll nail down further as we get further into discovery.
So do you think that what happened was that whoever you voted for as you voted down the ticket, or they all got flipped, or that people who voted straight tickets got flipped, or that every nth vote got flipped, or that some races were manipulated and others weren't? Which what? How does it work?
We think that it's the last one, that that this race was manipulated, the presidential race was manipulated. We also have evidence that the Chief Justice race was manipulated, and it so happens that these were the two races that in the pre-election polling showed the candidates were running neck and neck.
Hmm. Interesting. And what sort of relief are you seeking? What would the outcome of this tell us what court you're suing in and what kind of power that court has to produce a remedy and what the remedy is that you're asking for?
The suit is, because it's a statewide candidacy, for the electors to the Electoral College. The court that we sue in is the State Supreme Court of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And the relief we're seeking is for the court to decertify the electors who had been certified by the Secretary of State to and order the Secretary of State to certify the electors for John Kerry and cast their votes for John Kerry.
Without a recount or without any specific physical evidence proving that Kerry actually won the vote? On the
well,
basis
there's
of these statistical?
Coincident with the election contest, there's an election recount that's been in progress.
Right.
And that, too, has been subject of additional litigation in terms of making sure the recount is done in a proper way.
Yeah.
And John Kerry, by the way, and Edwards are involved in that litigation, saying that the recount was not done properly and that the federal court should mandate proper procedures so that the votes are accurately recounted.
Yeah, I've already seen stories in the press about how the recount is going along in Ohio. Everything's fine. They're doing these 3% early tests, and the 3% tests are showing that there's no problem, and it looks like everything is fine. You're suggesting that that's not the case. We've only got about a half a minute left here, by the way.
Yeah, that's not the case, and there'll be litigation over that, and our litigation ties right in with the recount, but we have a little bit more control over how it's done. Tom, while I've got you, I should probably break some national news here.
Okay.
The Ohio Supreme Court today declined jurisdiction on the Chamber of Commerce appeal, where they were trying to overturn an order from the lower courts that they produce the names of the corporations who tried to influence Ohio Supreme Court elections. That just was announced today.
Well, Cliff, stick around with us for a couple of minutes. I'd like to find out a little more about what that means. If you don't mind hanging out over a break here.
Sure.
Okay. And let's also, if anybody wants to get on the line here, has a question for Cliff Arnebeck, the attorney for the Alliance for Democracy, our number 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Where being progressive never felt so good.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Say what you want, mean what you say.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, we're talking with Cliff Arnebeck. Cliff, I am pronouncing your name right.
Yes.
Okay. The co-chairman of the Alliance for Democracy, chairman of the Legal Affairs Committee for Common Cause, Ohio. And you've been litigating against the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. If you can just very quickly, we just have a few minutes in this segment, and I've got a caller here for you also. But just what is the significance of the Supreme Court case with regard to the Chamber of Commerce?
Well, for the past 4 years, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce has been amassing approximately $14 million of corporate treasury money to influence the Ohio Supreme Court election. And as you well know, Tom, based upon your expertise in the, you know, this whole question of corporate influence, for about 100 years now, Ohio law and federal law has outlawed corporate money where it's directly for the purpose of influencing candidate elections.
Right. It was Teddy Roosevelt who got that passed in 1907.
Right. Well, there's some folks here who preferred Mark Hanna's view of politics, where corporations could by elections, and they've been trying to bring back those good old days for the past 4 years. So we've been litigating, that is, the Alliance for Democracy has been litigating this for the past 4 years, and we've been successful, and got a common pleas judge ordered that the chamber either disclose the names of people, the corporations who made these illegal contributions, or pay $25,000 a day in fines. The chamber appealed that. The Court of Appeals unanimously upheld the court order. And then the chamber appealed it to the Ohio Supreme Court. And today, the Ohio Supreme Court announced that they were declining to review it. They dissolved the stay. So now they may file in the U.S. Supreme Court, but it looks like they're going to have to fork over the information and we'll go forward with completing that litigation.
Fascinating. Well done. Mark Hanna, by the way, for our listeners, was the Karl Rove to President McKinley, after whom Rove says he's patterning the Bush presidency. This from the robber baron era. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Jeff in Denver, Colorado, on the line for Cliff Arnebeck. Hey, Cliff. Hey, Jeff. You're live with Cliff.
Hi, Cliff. One of the things I see, I'm on the ground, you know, investigating pull tapes and so forth, and we see that the real problem is not so much that there's the fraud, is that we can't prove who won. And is there any legal way that we can deal with things of saying, hey, you know, the government has to prove who won and cannot do that?
You mean you can't prove who won because there's no paper trail?
Yes. We absolutely can't prove in almost every race who won.
Cliff?
Yeah, that's a real problem with these machines without paper trails. That's definitely a problem. In Ohio, we don't quite have the problem to the same extent, because many of the ballots are punch card ballots. So if you could actually get a hand count recount or an accurate machine recount of those paper ballots, those punch card ballots, we could probably get the correct result.
But this is
a problem, and Ronnie Duggar, who's the founder of the Alliance for Democracy, wrote an article back in 1988 on this very problem.
Yeah.
And, you think about what a good paper trail we have with state lotteries and with your ATMs and et cetera, et cetera. It's really incredible that we would basically give our voting process over to machines without any ability to audit.
And I can tell you, Cliff, if Diebold was owned by George Soros and ESNS was owned by Barbara Streisand, this would not stand for 1 minute. The fact that these are Republican-owned companies, it's very strange. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I appreciate it. Cliff Arnebeck is the attorney for the Alliance for Democracy, chairman of the Legal Affairs Committee of the Common Cause in Ohio. For more information, go to thealliancefordemocracy.org or freepress.org. Find more information. Cliff, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you.
I do appreciate it. And good luck on your lawsuit. Keep us up to date. Give us a shout from time to time. We'll put you on the air, and we'll keep our listeners up to date on how this is going.
Love to do it.
Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protest.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Start me up.
And welcome back. Urge your senator to stand with your representative and contest the vote in order to repeat the 2000 silence from the Senate. Progressive Democrats of America have this whole campaign going. I've been getting these emails and news releases and whatnot. PDAmerica.org is their website, Progressive Democrats of America. There's going to be a big rally in Ohio. For our Ohio listeners, January 3rd, that's a week from today, Monday, January 3rd, 2005, pro-democracy count every vote rally in Columbus, Ohio. It's going to start, it will be held at the Capitol Theater, 77 South High Street, across from the Ohio State Capitol. It begins at 2 p.m. Ohio Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, MoveOn.org, Anti-War Coalition, United for Peace and Justice, Ohio State Senator Joyce Beatty, Case Ohio and others are going to be there. So interesting. I mean, is this moving? Well, I shouldn't phrase it as a question because I'm of the opinion that it is actually moving from the realm of tinfoil hat conspiracy theory stuff into the realm of, hey, there's a real problem here and something we need to do something about. I think Jeff in Denver, the point that he raised is perhaps the most important and salient one. And that is that if you voted on a machine that did not produce a paper ballot, a paper trail, or if you did not fill in a paper ballot, there is no way for that, for whatever government agency that recorded your vote, for the registrar or the secretary of state or the county voting or precinct voting officials, to prove that you actually voted that way. And it may well be that you voted for George W. Bush and your vote got counted for John Kerry, or vice versa. May well be. And here we have now nearly 80% of the vote in the United States either counted on non-paper machines, paperless machines, or people making paper, you know, filling out either punch cards or filling out paper ballots, and they're being scanned by computers. And When they look at these things now the good news, I suppose, is that when we look at what happened in the state of Washington, we see that it looked like really the biggest problem, as it were the 700 missing votes in King County, a very heavily Democratic county, and somehow they had misplaced 700 and some odd votes, and they found those votes and counted them, and hey, surprise, the Democrat won. Certainly an awful lot of voter suppression went on in not just Ohio, but all across the United States, particularly in Democratic districts. I mean, this is how George W. Bush got as close as he got in Florida in the year 2000. Somewhere between 60 and 90,000 African-Americans in the state of Florida were thrown off the voting rolls because somebody in Texas had a name similar to them and had been convicted of a felony. And this, of course, the NAACP holding vigils and protests, which were by and large not covered by the national media. Very upset about this. Every member of the Congressional Black Caucus getting up at the time that the vote was counted in Congress in January 6th of 2000, asking for a senator to join them in protesting the vote, saying that they did not believe that that vote should be certified. And they could not find a senator to go along with them. So now there's this campaign to get a senator to go along with this thing, to get a senator to stand up and say, yes, I have questions about this vote. I question the vote. I doubt the veracity of this vote. I'm not convinced that this vote is legal. I would like to see some proof. Which brings us back to the original problem. Here you have the company that Chuck Hagel used to be the president of, Senator Chuck Hagel, a Republican, ES&S. It was the company that became ES&S, producing machines that in many cases have no paper trail. You have Diebold producing machines with no paper trail. There's several other companies that are producing machines with no paper trail. Weirdly, or oddly, all of them seem to have heavy connections to Republicans. And the Republican Congress and the Republican Senate pushed through in 2002 the Help America Vote Act, a piece of legislation that gave the states $3.8 billion to buy more of these kinds of machines, further enriching these Republican-affiliated corporations. And everybody at the time just figured, well, you know, it's just another pork barrel spending thing on the part of the Republicans, give money to their buddies. But it turns out it may be much more than that. It may have been the rigging of the vote in the United States. People don't like to hear this. I don't like to hear this. I have resisted for a long time believing this. I mean, I've held open the possibility. You know, it's, and I've talked about it here on this program. Well, you know, it's, but always figured, you know, it had to be something local. It had to. But the fact that, you know, we had Rush Holt on this program almost 2 years ago. Congressman Rush Holt from New Jersey. The guy's a physicist. He's a scientist. He's got a PhD in physics. He understands math. He understands computers. And he said, you can't have a vote that people are going to have confidence in if you don't have a machine that produces a paper ballot. It's very simple. And so he puts in legislation into the House of Representatives to simply require, now this wouldn't take away all the profits from Diebold and ES&S and the other, and Sequoia and the other companies. Wouldn't diminish their profits. In fact, it would actually probably enhance the, no, probably about it. It would actually enhance their profits because they could, you know, they could sell a $100 printer for $150. They could mark up the printer just like they mark up the machine. They could probably even sell the paper that it gets, you know, the printer prints on. And think of the money they could make selling ink cartridges. As you may know, printers these days are very often sold at cost simply so that you will become addicted to the print cartridge. That's where the printer companies make their money. HP doesn't make money selling printers. They make money selling print cartridges, which is why they've gotten, you know, better and better at producing cartridges that can't be refilled. So here, the legislation from Rush Holt could have meant extraordinary increases in profits for the voting machine companies. Yet all of a sudden, the Republicans are opposed to it. He has almost every Democrat in the House signed up for this thing, and a couple of Republicans, folks like Ron Paul, who seem to be, you know, true believers in the integrity of the vote. But the majority of the Republicans were told by Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert, don't go near that thing. Don't you dare put your name on a piece of legislation that would cause there to be a paper trail for the vote. At which point I have to ask, why? Why? And not one member of Congress or one member of the Senate Republicans has come forward with any kind of rational answer. Well, it's going to cost too much money. Come on. If Diebold said that when they made ATM machines, the Citibank would have laughed him out of the room. You're entitled to a receipt when you get $200 out of the ATM. When you buy gas, you run your credit card through the machine, you buy the gas, you can push the button that says, yes, I would like a receipt. But when you vote, you can't? Why? Please convince me this is not part of some Stalinesque strategy to steal the vote in the United States that's been going on since the year 2000. I mean, if so, this is the ultimate crime against democracy. And if not, why would they work so hard against laws like Rush Holt's bill? Why? I don't get it. I just don't get it. And this then brings about these kinds of situations. Brenda Denson Price. You probably never heard of Brenda Denson Price. She's 53 years old. She wanted to be a member of the county commissioner's court in Kaufman County, Texas. This was really and truly one of her lifelong ambitions. She studied for it. She recruited the ongoing commissioner, Ivan Johnson, as her mentor and campaign manager. She ran as a Democrat in the town of Kaufman in Kaufman County, Texas, for the county commissioner's court. There were 9 precincts, 9 voting boxes counted. With virtually all of them counted, she went home to go to bed. She was 200 votes ahead. It looked like she was winning. Tony Crow calls her up. Says, you better get back over here. They're about to steal the election away from Brenda. He calls up Ivan Johnson, excuse me. Johnson was at the headquarters. So he goes over and says, what's going on here? Come out here and explain, said the administrator to an assistant. Between the two of them, who both seemed pretty nervous, Denson Price caught the words glitch and disk. Turns out all of a sudden, according to the official returns, each candidate had received 2,867 votes. This is a little county. Fewer than 6,000 voters. The vote was split right down the middle. Brenda had been ahead by 200, and all of a sudden, it's tied. And the administrator and the assistant are saying, glitch, disk, deja vu, hollered the headline in Wednesday morning's Kaufman Herald, is the newspaper in Kaufman County, Texas. The article read, a computer software glitch is being blamed for controversy that occurred Tuesday night as ballots were being counted by Kaufman County election officials. The problem occurred when data taken from one counting machine to another computer for collating became corrupted. The data roughly doubled the amount of votes counted for several precincts, according to Kaufman County Information Technology Director George York. Right. When Brenda returned to the courthouse Wednesday morning with Justice of the Peace James Williams, the election administrator assured her that a recount could be requested at a cost of $2,000. She did it. Kaufman Herald also missed a little drama that took place outside Bethlehem Baptist Church on Election Day. This was one of the polling places, one of the precincts. According to Election Judge Jones in a signed statement, there was this husband of a Republican poll watcher who was hanging around the entrance to the church for at least an hour, well within the 100-foot marker that designates a safe space for visitors. This Republican husband challenged the presence of an exit pollster and generally became such a nuisance that Jones called the police. By the time the police arrived, the Republican husband had departed, but not before apologizing to Jones for the behavior that had compelled Jones to leave his rightful post overseeing the election inside the church. Can you spell diversion? The electronic recount had found 2,870 votes for Denson Price, so she pays for the recount. And she gets 2,870 votes. Her opponent has 2,873 votes. The Republican won by 3 votes, according to this. But during the recount, alleges the suit, the election judge miscounted 2 ballots, failing to give Denson Prince one more vote and failing to take away one vote from her opponent. Adding one vote to Denson Prince while taking one away from her opponent would close the race to 1 vote. So then she asks to see the discarded early votes. And what does she discover? But that in a bunch of the votes, in a bunch of the ballots, these were paper ballots where you fill in the thing with a pencil, and then they get counted by a machine. That in a bunch of these ballots, somebody had erased votes for her and filled in the circle for her opponent, her Republican opponent. And what makes this particularly odd is that the pencils that they hand out at the polling places don't have erasers on them. They're those little 2-inch stubby things, you know, pencil lead, no eraser. So she says, what about all these ballots where my name has been erased, or the vote for my name has been erased, and my opponent has been filled in? Oh, says the head of elections in that precinct. The voters bring erasers with them. This is a verbatim quote. Oh, the voters bring erasers with them. On another one, somebody had apparently brought whiteout with them. You know that stuff back in the old days when we used to use typewriters and you'd have to white things out? It's that it white. Somebody had whited out a vote for her and filled it in for her opponent. What a coincidence. Or the coincidence reported by Terry Crow, who saw a district judge enter the counting room on election night just before the glitch was reversed and the commissioner election tied. This is a story which is still ongoing, by the way. Greg Moses writes about it on TexasCivilRightsReview.org. It's called 40 Faxes and a Whisper, the Texas Election Scandal. Just another example of what happens when you don't have a fully transparent electoral system, or when the people who are responsible for running elections also happen to be the people who are in charge of the campaign for one or another party. It used to be in the South, the Democrats were notorious for stealing elections. LBJ elevated it to an art form in Texas. Now it's the Republicans. Let's just clean this thing up so it's not either one. Let's do that. Let's have a commitment to do that, to get clean elections in America soon. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners.
I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Staring in the face of the moon, hoping my heart has a little more room for missing you. Staring in the face of the moon.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, wrapping up the second hour of our program.
Falls from heaven on this earthly plane.
Just have to share with you, this may be...
Nocturnal shadows illuminating pain.
I know some folks are thinking... In this hour, we've really gotten out there. I don't think so, frankly. But anyway, here's another one that may be... There is some speculation now. This has not made the mainstream press, but it is flying all over the Internet. You know that hump on the back, on George W. Bush's back during the debates? Everybody thought he was getting instructions from Karl Rove. And the big difference in how he was behaving from one debate to another. And then on the WhiteHouse.gov website, there's a picture of him driving a pickup truck wearing a T-shirt with this hump between his shoulders also, this little box between his shoulders. There's dozens of pictures now of him with this box between the back of his shoulders. And several that show a wire going from his belt up underneath his tie into his shirt. And a lot of people are wondering, you know, what this is. Everybody thought it was some sort of communications device. Well, now... There's a few doctors who have come out and said, no, he is wearing a device that actually has a name, it's called the Life Vest. And what it does is it monitors the heart. And if somebody has atrial fibrillation, then the thing between the shoulders is actually a battery. You know, it's a defibrillator. You know, it's like those two paddles that they put on your chest to shock you back to life. Well, it turns out George Bush's father has had atrial fibrillation. It was caused by Graves' hyperthyroidism. His mother also had it. In fact, as you'll recall, they both got it at the same time, right around the Gulf War, living in Washington, D.C., which led to this aggressive search for iodine or lithium in the water supply of Washington, D.C. and the White House, because the odds against two people getting Graves' disease at the same time in the same place are like millions to one against it. And now there's folks who are speculating that George W. Bush has the same problem and that it has damaged his heart, and therefore he's wearing a portable defibrillator. And that he may have even had a few small strokes as a consequence of this so far. We will continue to follow this story. If so, you can see why they did not want this to come up during the election. Dick Cheney, we all know, is wearing a defibrillator in his chest. This would be an external one for George W. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. And who knows? I mean, it makes more sense than a communications device, frankly, to me. It's the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
If you're an aspiring performer who wants to be on the screen, Chicago might be your kind of town. In fact, virtually everyone in the Windy City will soon be seen by various police authorities. In a leap into the abyss of the surveillance society, Chicago authorities are installing a web of spy cameras linked to a sophisticated new computer program that not only will view everyone who appears on various streets, but also will alert police agents when anyone is acting suspicious. What is suspicious? Wandering around aimlessly, lingering outside a building, pulling your car over to the shoulder of a highway, leaving a package in a doorway, and other common acts you and I have done 1,000 times. What we're doing is a totally new concept, says the director of this intrusive technology. It's going to take us to a whole new level. I'll say, the Snooper Vision cameras can zoom in on you and follow you from camera to camera, recording your every move, whether or not you're doing anything wrong. Faceless bureaucrats will sit in an undisclosed fortified building, monitoring the screens and dispatching armed police to accost loiterers, aimless wanderers, and other suspicious characters. Not only will the police place these so-called smart cameras around town, but so will housing, transportation, and other city agencies, even street sweepers, making Chicagoans the most watched people in America. Orwell would be so proud. Of course, the authorities insist that this is for our own good, claiming we'll all be safer. Chicago's new surveillance director says the value we'll gain in public safety far outweighs any perception by the community that this is Big Brother who's watching. But wait a minute, it is Big Brother watching. Yet Chicago's mayor dismisses all of us pesky civil libertarians, saying that, after all, we're not inside your home or your business. This is Jim Hightower saying, not yet they're not.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his Vicodin. Speaking of which, we have our What's Up for the Year. Our If I Only Had a Brain alert. Yes, indeed. The 10 most outrageous statements we've heard this year from members of the media. This is some Media Matters from America. Rush Limbaugh on the Abu Ghraib photos. Quote, I'm talking about people having a good time. These people, you ever heard of emotional release? You ever heard of need to blow off some steam? End quote. Ann Coulter. Senator John Kerry will approve the economy and the emergency services and body bag industry. End quote. Tony Blankley called philanthropist George Soros, quote, a Jew who figured out a way to survive the Holocaust, end quote. And believe it or not, it's Michael Savage said, quote, when you hear human rights, think gays. Think only one thing, someone who wants to rape your son, end quote. Yes, Michael Savage, he is so bright. All gays are rapists. That goes beyond sick, you know? That goes beyond weird. That goes right to... It goes beyond weird. It goes right to sick. It's Oliver North, quote, every terrorist out there is hoping John Kerry is the next president of the United States, end quote. Turns out, by the way, that according to the British hostages who were recently released, Italian? Italian or French? One or the other. I was reading it in this morning's paper. They said that their captors were hoping that George W. Bush would get reelected because he's their greatest recruiting poster. Pat Robertson on gays and lesbians, quote, self-absorbed hedonists that want to impose their particular sexuality on the rest of America. I think he said that in the context of speaking of Mary Cheney, by the way, but I could be wrong. Pat Buchanan, homosexuality is an affliction like alcoholism. Bill O'Reilly to a Jewish caller, if you're really offended, you got to go to Israel. Bill Cunningham, Clear Channel radio host, who appeared as a guest in the Sean Hannity show. The election is over because Elizabeth Edwards is now sung. And Jerry Falwell, quote, and we're going to invite PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, to Wild Game Night as our special guests, PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. We want you to come. We're going to give you top seat there so you can sit there and suffer. This is one of my special groups. Another one's the ACLU. Another's the NOW, the National Order of Witches. He says, I've got a lot of special groups, end quote. The marvelous Dazens of the Right. Speaking of which, our misinformer of the year, this I think is fascinating. Media Matters has been monitoring, analyzing, and collecting conservative misinformation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, since May of 2004. And they have come up with, and you can find all this at MediaMatters.org, by the way. David Brock. There you go. David Brock started this thing. He's a former hitman for the right. He wrote the book about Anita Hill, a character assassination book about Anita Hill. And saw the light. Finally figured out, hey, this is not it. And so he decided to start outing the right, his former allies. And he says, of all the news anchors, columnists, pundits, and reporters whose work we've critiqued and corrected, one stands above all the rest. We're pleased to announce, this being Media Matters, we're pleased to announce that with at least 75, we stopped counting, lies, distortions, and mischaracterizations, television host, columnist, radio host, former Inside Edition anchor, man of the people, and Harvard University graduate Bill O'Reilly can now claim the title 2004 Misinformer of the Year. They go on to say that they've got the top 10 most outrageous comments by Bill O'Reilly in 2004, this being just in the last 6 months of 2004. Oh, number one. O'Reilly falsely claimed Bush did not oppose the 9/11 Commission. O'Reilly defended President George W. Bush from a Kerry Edwards 04 TV ad highlighting Bush's opposition to creation of the 9/11 Commission by denying that Bush, this on October 21st, by denying that Bush had ever opposed the commission. In fact, Bush did oppose the creation of the 9/11 Commission. Number two, this from October 19th, 2004, O'Reilly falsely claimed Iraq had ricin. O'Reilly responded to a caller to his radio show by defending the Iraq war, quote, "They did have ricin up there in the north, so why are you discounting that so much?" End quote. In fact, the Dulfer Report, the final report of the Iraq Survey Group led by Charles A. Dulfer, who conducted a survey for weapons in Iraq following the U.S.-led invasion, at the cost, I would add, of millions of taxpayer dollars, indicates that Iraq did not have any ricin anywhere, anyhow, in any fashion. Back in September, O'Reilly repeated discredited claims on the Iraq al-Qaeda link. O'Reilly interrupted a former Clinton administration official who tried to correct the record on O'Reilly's claim that terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi constitutes a direct link between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein's Iraq. He also allowed a conservative guest to repeat without challenge other discredited claims about Iraq's supposed involvement in terrorism, claims O'Reilly himself has cited in the past. Number four. O'Reilly fabricated the Paris Business Review. He made it up. He made up out of whole cloth a magazine. He created a magazine out of whole cloth. The Paris Business Review. Haven't you ever heard of it? Maybe that's because it doesn't exist. Oh, no. Don't look behind the curtain there. Yes, O'Reilly was leading the boycott French goods boycott. He falsely claimed they've lost billions of dollars in France, according to the Paris Business Review, due to an American boycott, and that he led to boycott French goods. Turns out there ain't no such publication. Number five, mislead of the year. O'Reilly cited phony stats to argue the taxes on the rich are excessive. O'Reilly tried to blow off the argument that wealthy Americans ought to pay more taxes by citing phony statistics about the tax burden the rich currently bear. This on his June 30th program. Just made up numbers. Phony numbers. Number six, O'Reilly confused on elementary economics. This from June 10th. O'Reilly told a caller on his radio show, quote, "We, that's the United States, have a trade deficit with everybody because everybody wants our stuff and we're not wild about snails," end quote, indicating that he doesn't know the definition of trade deficit and implying that the United States ran a trade surplus with France. In fact, in the first 4 months of 2004, the U.S. had a $3 billion trade deficit with France. Not to mention, I would add, throughout the year, an almost $600 billion trade deficit with the rest of the world. If Walmart was a nation, it would be the 10th largest purchaser of products from China. We don't like those communists unless they're selling us stuff cheap, right? Number seven, O'Reilly doctored a quotation to suggest Soros wished his own father dead during his smear campaign against progressive financier, philanthropist, and political activist George Soros. Bill O'Reilly doctored a 1995 quotation by Soros to make it seem as if Soros wished his own father was dead. That's this on June 1st of 2004. Number eight. This is the countdown here. This is absolutely incredible. Number eight, the misinformer of the year, Bill O'Reilly. Number eight of his most outrageous comments. O'Reilly questioned if Teddy Kennedy, would show up to the Democratic convention as Kennedy spoke behind him. Believe it or not. O'Reilly teased an upcoming segment of the O'Reilly Factor broadcast live from the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, by saying of convention speaker Edward Kennedy, and I quote, "When we come back, we'll let you listen to Ted Kennedy for a while if he shows up," end quote. In fact, Kennedy had already shown up and had been speaking for several minutes as O'Reilly only needed to turn around to see. Maybe he's been sharing a maid with Rush Limbaugh. Number nine, O'Reilly disparaged Democrats with trifecta of voter falsehoods. In a discussion about what went wrong for Democrats in the November 2nd election, O'Reilly claimed the Democrats, quote, lost votes from 4 years ago, end quote, that 18 to 24-year-olds didn't go to the polls, end quote, and that, quote, committed Republicans didn't carry the day for the president. Independents did, end quote. All three are false. More Democrats voted than 4 years ago, and more of them voted for John Kerry than voted for Al Gore, number one. 18 to 24-year-olds did show up in larger numbers than ever before at the polls. And committed Republicans did carry the day for the president, assuming the day was carried, not independents. And that's just the facts. But Bill O'Reilly said the opposite of the facts on November 4th of this year. And number 10, O'Reilly on the radio, three lies, one broadcast. In one broadcast, three lies. Lie number one, Bush's tax cuts didn't create the budget deficit. Well, in fact, they did. Or at least a large portion of it. Perhaps the majority of it, certainly close to half of it, according to the latest stats I saw from the Congressional Budget Office. Lie number two, socialistic French, Germans, and Canadian governments tax at 80%. 80%? He actually said that on the radio? 80% tax in France, Germany, and Canada? I can't believe that. Well, here it is in black and white. This was on his July 7th, 04 program. Here's the transcript. Lie number three, Canadian, British, and French media are government-controlled, but Italian media is free. Yeah, right. Government-controlled, but Italian media is free. You know, that really kind of brings to mind our good old friend Silvio Berlusconi. You remember him? Yes, there's our Berlusconi alert music. Bill O'Reilly saying that only the Italian media is free. The French, the Canadian, the British are all government-controlled. Well, in fact, Berlusconi bought a radio station, then a TV station, then a newspaper, then another radio station, then another radio station, then a radio network, then a TV network, then another TV network. And then when he controlled 90%, one man, of all the media in Italy, he decided to run his party and himself for prime minister. And guess what? Surprise, surprise, he won! The only media left that was not controlled by Berlusconi, not the only, there were a few small ones, but the only major media left that wasn't owned by Berlusconi was the official, their equivalent of public broadcasting, or the BBC, the official Canadian state broadcasting network. And so he put a good buddy of his in charge of that. So not only did O'Reilly get it wrong, the Canadian, British, and French media are not government-controlled, but when he said the Italian media is free, it's free only if your name is Silvio Berlusconi. 20 minutes past the hour. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
It's ironic. They're called answering machines, but they never give you answers. Oh, sure, they tell you so-and-so isn't here right now, but you have no idea where they went or when they'll be back. Of course, with GEICO, you won't talk to an answering machine. They have thousands of car insurance specialists standing by, so you always get answers from a real live person. No wondering, no waiting, no irony.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone, the Tom Hartman radio program. Refusing to be brushed off by Democratic opposition in the Senate, President Bush plans to nominate for a second time 20 people who did not receive up or down votes on their nominations for federal judgeships. Speaking of federal judgeships, let me just share with you, many of you probably never knew some of the positions of Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas. Scalia most likely will be the next Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and Clarence Thomas, the guy along with Scalia, who George W. Bush has said he would view as a role model for future nominees to the court. So here's a few little details from the Center for American Progress. Scalia opposes efforts to desegregate schools. In his concurrence on Freeman versus Pitts, Scalia indicated that he would favor stripping the authority of federal courts to regulate school desegregation, even for those schools that remain significantly segregated. So he wants to take us back to the 1950s, I guess. Thomas favors state-sponsored religion. Clarence Thomas has advocated the position the constitutionally mandated church-state separation applies, quote, to the federal government but not to individual states, a position that would allow Virginia, for example, to declare a state religion, end quote. He would allow individual states to, quote, adopt particular religions and use tax money to proselytize for them, end quote. These are actual quotes from Clarence Thomas in the case of Elk Grove versus Newdow, 2004. Well, that's interesting. That means, according to Clarence Thomas, Utah could declare itself Mormon, encourage polygamy if they wanted to go with that particular branch of Mormonism. I know the mainstream Mormons have not embraced polygamy since Utah became a state. But there are a whole bunch of polygamous Mormons out there. And they could require taxes to go to the Mormon church. I mean, I wonder what state, let's see, Vermont, what church would we become? Probably Unitarian. That's the official religion. Oh, my. Oh, my. So Scalia wants to take us back to the 1950s. Clarence Thomas wants to take us back to the 1690s. 1691 was the last year that the state of Massachusetts, officially hung witches in Boston Common. You know the commons in Boston? It's this, like, big park, this patch of green. Well, the state of Boston, or the Commonwealth of Boston, used to conduct public hangings there, just like they do in Saudi Arabia today. Every Friday in Saudi Arabia, they have the public beheadings in the soccer stadium. Can you imagine playing soccer on a field that's all that blood? Maybe they use tarps, I don't know. But in any case, they used to hang witches. The last one, the 1691. So Scalia wants to take us back to that. And so Massachusetts could once again declare itself Puritan. You know, right back to the British Revolution. The one in England, right? The Cromwell. And to go back to hanging witches. Scalia supports sex discrimination. Scalia dissented from the court's 7-1 decision that rejected the Virginia Military Institute's male-only admissions policy, called the male-only admission standard at the school a well-rooted tradition. Yes, if something's a well... So Scalia wants to take us back to pre-Civil War days, I guess. If something is a well-rooted tradition, slavery, after all, has a 6,000-year history. It goes all the way back to Gilgamesh. Before that, in all probability, but that's as far back as our written records go. If it's a well-rooted tradition, it's something that's worth keeping. Yes. Yes. And I have a few more of these. I just have to share these with you because they are just such shockers, and they are an indication of the kind of court that the Bush administration wants to bring us. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number, by the way, if you'd like to weigh in on this or other matters. 29 minutes past the hour.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Taco Bell has not been invited back to the Student Union of Cal State San Bernardino. The fast food giant will not be returning next fall after students launched a campaign saying that Florida tomato pickers are underpaid and mistreated. A national boycott led by the Student Farm Worker Alliance and the Coalition of Emokali Workers has resulted in 21 colleges removing Taco Bell from their campuses. According to the coalition, the pickers are paid roughly $55 for every 2 tons of tomatoes they pick. Also, most pickers receive no health insurance, sick leave, vacation, or pension. Taco Bell officials insist that they buy less Florida tomatoes than any other fast food company. The company has also sent a check to the coalition for $110,000 and has offered to assist them in lobbying for changes to Florida labor laws.
U.S. call centers are increasingly turning to home sourcing in addition to the infamous outsourcing they've been doing with customer service jobs. A report by the research firm IDC says there are roughly 100,000 workers in the U.S. working from their homes as call center representatives. Some companies are finding that using this method can cut their costs while avoiding problems associated with shipping that work overseas. Some customers have discovered they're dealing with overseas representatives who often aren't familiar with U.S. customers, but home-based U.S. workers solve that problem. The research company Forrester has estimated that by 2015, more than 3 million U.S. service jobs will be sent offshore, but this new trend may mitigate that job exportation.
Holiday travelers on U.S. Airways found more baggage lost and more flights canceled than usual. The disruption was so bad that the U.S. Transportation Department had to call on the airline to shape up and get its operations straightened out. The airline attributed the more than 300 canceled flights and thousands of pieces of stranded luggage on the heavy storms and a large number of workers calling out sick. More than 20,000 union workers are facing permanent pay and benefit cuts as the airline struggles to recover from bankruptcy. Union representatives for the pilots, flight attendants, and machinists say there was no organized sick out. Airline representatives also say they do not believe the unusual number of sick calls were part of any organized protest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Migrant farm workers are still among the most economically disadvantaged workers in the U.S. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they earn just 58% of what all wage and salary workers are paid. Roughly 45% of migrant farm workers are 25 years old or older. More than one-third have total family incomes of less than $15,000. Median weekly earnings for migrant farm workers is now $300. The total number of migrant workers is down to 745,000, according to the USDA.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come, writers and critics, who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming.
And no. Well, I'll tell you who we're naming right now. Thomas and Scalia, this is incredible. The voting history on these two guys who George W. Bush holds up as his examples of competent jurisprudence, of excellent judges. This is absolutely extraordinary. Thomas, Clarence Thomas, would allow the president to effectively waive due process rights. Due process means, like, you know, it works through the courts the way it's supposed to. You're entitled to your rights under the Constitution, that sort of thing. In last term's confrontation over detainees and the war on terror, 8 of the 9 justices squarely rejected the Bush administration's sweeping claim that it could detain citizens indefinitely as enemy combatants based merely on the executive branch's assertion of enemy combatant status. Only Thomas supported the Bush administration's position. He claimed, and I quote, "Due process requires nothing more than a good faith executive determination." Now, let me translate this into English. What Justice Clarence Thomas solely, the only one of all the Supreme Court justices, what Justice Clarence Thomas said was, if George W. Bush says that the way that you're being treated by the courts is legal, then it's legal. You can be held without trial. You can be held without access to an attorney. You can be held and not know what the charges are against you. You can be refused a trial by a jury of your peers, even though the Constitution clearly lays that out. You can be denied bail. You can be refused the right to have the Red Cross visit with you. You can be refused. You can be, you know, they can say, no, you can't get mail from friends or family. All of these things. And if George W. Bush says it's legal, then according to Clarence Thomas, it's legal. Period. He says due process requires nothing more than a good faith executive determination. I was always under the impression that due process required a law. that you be following a law. But no, says Clarence Thomas, due process simply means whatever the president says, that's what goes. What's wrong with this picture? Scalia and Thomas are excellent conservatives, economic conservatives. You know, they fit right in with the economic cons, the Bill Frists, the Tom DeLays, the Denny Hastert's, the George W. Bush's, Dick Cheney's of the world. They oppose family leave, and they oppose medical leave. No, they say the government has no right interfering in the marketplace, as if there is some independent marketplace. I suspect that they never took Econ 101 and realized that the marketplace is a result of the government. The government creates the marketplace. Yes, in a micro sense, there is a marketplace independent of government. If you come over to my house and say, I'll mow your lawn, if you'll come over to my house and water my lawn, then we've engaged in commerce, which is independent of government to some extent. Now, you could argue the government provided the water that was used and how did you get the lawnmower and all that. But just let's just, you know, use that as an example. Say, okay, fine, that's pure free trade. But if you come over to my house and say, I'll mow your lawn for $5, is that a free market transaction? No, I'm sorry, it's not. That's a transaction that involves government because we're trading dollars, and dollars are the creation of government. In order to have a marketplace in the macro sense, in the largest sense, you have to have a currency, a medium of exchange, that everyone agrees on its value. It has to be stable or relatively stable. There has to be a court system to enforce it. In other words, there have to be rules to the game of business. And we, the people, get to make those rules since it's our marketplace, because it's our government that created it. And we collectively have said, you know, we would like for us to have some protection against predatory employers and corporations. We would like for us to have the ability to have, mandated by law, actually, sick days, maternity leave, vacations. We're not going to go overboard. You know, in France, you're required to take 4 weeks of vacation every year. My recollection is that in Germany it's 3 weeks a year, plus holidays. We all just make it a week or 2 weeks. Or what about unpaid leave if you've got somebody who's like, you know, what if somebody in your family has just, you know, God forbid, a catastrophic accident? They break their neck. They you know, some horrible thing happens, and they need you there to care for them. Well, there was the Family and Medical Leave Act said that if a family member was in serious, you know, dire straits and needed an employee to care for them, a family member who is an employee of a company, that company had to allow that person to take up to 3 months off without pay. This is unlike, for example, in Sweden, where if you have a child, you get 9 months off, maybe it's a year, with pay. But no, this is minimal interference in the marketplace. This is, you don't have to pay this person, but you do have to give them time off to take care of a loved one. See, after all, the whole point of having commerce, the whole point of having a marketplace, the whole point of having an economy is to keep your country together, is to have your middle class, is to have a nation that works, both literally and metaphorically. So the Family and Medical Leave Act guarantees most workers up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave to care for a loved one. Last year, the Supreme Court upheld that law as constitutional. They said, sure enough, this is constitutional. Guess who voted to strike it down? The only two members of the court who voted to strike down the Family and Medical Leave Act, Scalia and Thomas. Absolutely remarkable. It gets worse. There are those among us who consider the capital, who consider capital punishment to be wrong. I'm among them, and here's my argument against capital punishment. My argument, actually, I have two. My twofold argument against capital punishment. Number one, occasionally we kill an innocent person. And in fact, we know this for a fact now. Now that we've had, you know, just in the last few years, DNA testing, several hundred people have been released from death row for crimes that they had obviously never committed. So, first argument, number one argument against capital punishment is very simple, very straightforward, that occasionally we kill people that are innocent. And frankly, I would rather have 100 people, you know, spend their lives in jail but not be killed than accidentally kill one person or you know, screw up the system who was innocent. So that's the first argument. The second argument actually, I think, is more powerful, although the first argument seems to be more logical. It appeals to more people intellectually, as it were. But the second argument is that the reason why we shouldn't have capital punishment is because it debases all of us. Now, here you have a situation in Iraq where hostages are being held and their heads are being sawed off. And we're all horrified. We're all sitting around going, oh, my God, look at that. They just cut that guy's head off. And, you know, they won't show it on television. It's just, it's barbaric. It's brutal. The reality is that in Saudi Arabia, the nation ruled by the House of Saud, the good, good friends for many decades of the Bush family, the patrons, really, of the Bush family, George W., would have lost two of his businesses had it not been for the intervention of Saudis. In one case, Osama bin Laden's brother, half-brother. In another case, one of the Saudi princes. In Saudi Arabia, every Friday afternoon, they're the spectator sport. You go down to the soccer stadium and you watch the public beheadings. If a man is sleeping with a woman to whom he is not married and she happens to be married to somebody else, she is beheaded. And there are numerous other crimes, but more often than not, they tend to fall into the sexual category. But beheadings happen every Friday in Saudi Arabia, in Mecca, in the town, the main soccer field. So here in the United States, there's been this debate. Well, actually, let me finish that thought. So what happens is that because capital punishment is so public and is done that way, it's done by beheading, that the people who are part of that culture become inured to it. They become comfortable with it. And so when they have a hostage and they say, yeah, this guy's a bad guy, let's off him. Instead of thinking about lethal injections, what do? They behead him. Because it's what they've seen. It's what they're used to. And so the second argument against capital punishment, I think, is perhaps the most cogent one, and that is that it brutalizes or coarsens all of us. When we kill, even under sanction of law, even when we say, oh, we're killing legally, this is also, of course, the argument against war. It's why war should literally, really, and truly be the last resort. Because when we kill, when we sanction killing, we are coarsening ourselves. We all have blood on our hands. Well, Scalia and Thomas support not only executing people, but in a 6-3 ruling, two of the three who were on the minority end of the ruling, they dissented, argued that executing mentally retarded convicts, people who had committed a crime, but who didn't have the intellectual capacity to know that it was a crime, takes pretty severe mental retardation, by the way, to be there, that was not cruel and unusual punishment. This in the case of Atkins versus Virginia, 2002. Fortunately, the court ruled 6-3 against him, but But we're still executing children, or at least Texas is. At least George W., I think, was the last one to execute a child. Scalia and Thomas, no doubt, would have supported that. Scalia and Thomas support brutality against prisoners. A recent case considered a Louisiana inmate who was, quote, shackled and then punched and kicked by two prison guards while a supervisor looked on. The beating left the inmate with a swollen face, loosened teeth, and a cracked dental plate, end quote. The court ruled the inmate's treatment violated the Eighth Amendment's prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment, but Scalia and Thomas dissented, arguing, quote, the Eighth Amendment was not violated by the insignificant harm the inmate suffered, end quote. In another case last year, Scalia and Thomas dissented from a 6-3 decision to ban the Alabama practice of chaining prisoners to outdoor hitching posts and abandoning them for hours without food, water, or a chance to use the bathroom. These cases, Hudson v. Milligan in 92 and Hope v. Peltzer in 2002. Scalia and Thomas support criminalizing consensual sex, consensual as in between two adults who agree to it. They dissented from the court's 6-3 decision to strike down a Texas state sodomy law that, quote, banned private consensual sex between adults of the same sex, end quote, and approvingly cited the execution of homosexuals during colonial times. They approvingly cited Scalia and Thomas think it was a good thing back in colonial times when gays were put to death for being gay. Scalia lashed into the decision for pandering to the so-called homosexual agenda, end quote. This in the Lawrence versus Thomas case last year, 2003. These are the guys that George W. Bush says he thinks should be the role models for future Supreme Court justices. Scalia and Thomas oppose federal environmental regulation of polluters. They voted to strip the EPA of the authority to prevent air damaging air pollution by industries when state agencies improperly failed to do so. They dissented from the court's decision that the EPA could make polluting companies use the, quote, best available control technology to limit pollution when they build new facilities. Amazing. I'll save the best for last. First, let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, how you doing today?
Thank you very much. 2 points, but first, if I may, the one that you're addressing about these odd rulings, I would call them odd. You know, about Scalia and Thomas.
Yeah, I would call them sick, but go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to be diplomatic. But, you know, ask yourself with Bush, who does he use his power for and who does he use his power against?
Yeah.
And that sums up Mr. Bush. But anyway, back to what you were saying about socialized countries. There was a real interesting debate that was ensuing when the Clintons were trying to get something done on health care. And quickly, the corporate monopoly media iced it, and they were bringing up the fact that in this country, we pay duopoly and triopoly and quadopoly through workman's comp. We pay the health in. We pay it through auto insurance. We pay the health in. Plus, we pay a big insurance premium if we're fortunate enough to have health insurance. And all those tri and quad levels of insurance and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I get it. I get it, Armin. We're out of time, but good point. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers.
Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. WIN reporter Vinny Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Caballero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community is going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected Measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Till the next time, we'll say goodbye. Till the next time, we'll say goodbye.
Well, we're getting close. 5 minutes before the end of the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, for our RadioPower.org listeners, Shelby wants me to let you know that she will be carrying the Randy Rhoads Show following this, which I'll be guest hosting. So if you continue to listen to RadioPower.org, you will hear that. 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number here on the Tom Hartman Program, also known as Viagra for your brain. Peter in Tallahassee on the line. Hey, Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. It's good to talk to you. First-time caller to your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Tom, I'm calling because of something that happened Friday. And as a result of your radio program, a fellow called to print that document. And do you know it's been deleted?
You're kidding.
No, no. It's just another example of the administration monitoring radio programs like yours and deleting it and changing history. In fact, you know, they just go back and they change history on the fly.
That's incredible. Was this during my program, or was it when I was filling in for Randy Rhodes?
No, it was during your program on Friday.
On Friday.
And I looked up the document. It did, in fact, exist, but by the middle of the afternoon on Friday, it was no longer there.
So the White House is monitoring this show.
Absolutely.
And updating their website. That's, you know, in a way, I'm flattered. Jock Gill is a good friend of mine. He's the guy who built the original WhiteHouse.gov website when he worked for Bill Clinton.
Yes, sir.
But whoever's running that thing now, I don't know what they're up to. I mean, it's pretty amazing. They've got James Madison in there as a Republican, right? The Republican Party didn't even exist then.
Yeah. The whole thing, the whole thing's a huge sham. I'm as disgusted with the people as those people as a man could be.
And, yeah.
And Tom, I appreciate your work, but I just wanted to share with your listeners that if somebody gives you information that's on WhiteHouse.gov, go there right away, print it right away, because it'll be gone.
Or it'll vanish down the rabbit hole. Peter, thanks for the call.
Yes,
great,
sir.
To hear from you. I do appreciate it. My goodness. My goodness. Thanks to Louise for engineering, or for producing our program today, for Rama for showing up and engineering the program, and to Brad for our music, Brad in New York City, and to Jay for producing our theme music, Jay in London, in fact. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, and Ben for our archives, and Mike Toth for our archives, and the folks in our chat room for showing up. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.